4 o'clock in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and you're tuned in to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Out of the Box is made possible by KKCR sustaining members in partnership with Kalaheo Chiropractic, Qingyang Village, and Healing Horses Kauai.
Kalaheo Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic, acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. 332-5580 or kalaheochiropractic.com.
Qingyang Shopping Village proudly supports Kauai's community radio by underwriting this program. Qingyang, the heart of Hanalei. Mahalo, Jeff Culverhouse, for your support.
Healing Horses Spring Riding and Horsemanship Day Camp, June 22nd through the 26th, July 6th through the 10th, and July 20th through the 24th. Fun-filled equestrian adventures and a safe learning environment for kids 4 to 18 years old. More info about Healing Horses at healinghorseskauai.org.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
Ha! That's why there's no bumping on the register. Make sure this one gets played before we get too far down the road.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
And the phone lines are happening. You know, yeah, do like that, like so, boom. Yes. And Michael, you joining us? Are you there? Can you hear us? Maybe not. How about now? We can hear you.
Okay, I can hear you guys.
Perfect. Now we can hear you.
We can hear you, too.
You are.
Okay, perfect. There we are, ladies
me?
And gentlemen.
Am I on
there? Well, you're listening to Out of the Box. I'm Rick C., sitting in
Rick
with...
Rick C. in the house.
Jimmy Trujillo, ladies and gentlemen. And Dr. Kiahi, as always, our faithful friend and co-host here, and by special arrangement with all of her managers, producers, and all those people, we have Alana again.
Alana again.
Yes.
Thanks, Alana. Who
is now helping with the tech support to get us all set up.
Yeah, getting
what we are doing today, if you had the benefit of listening last week, that will help you to some degree, but it's not necessary to have gone there. We are doing a series of shows here at KKCR about, in generally, broadly speaking, racism in Hawaii. There's many ways. There's the, as Jimmy calls it, R&R, racism and relations in Hawaii. What this show and a number of shows are going to be looking at, and of course this is something that is we are doing it in relationship to the different issues that are going on in the continent, the United States, and so this is one way in which we're going to be expressing that. We're going to start the show today with our guest who was on for the 5 to 6 o'clock hour last week on Out of the Box, and we will be recapping what we did last week's show. Last week during the 5 to 6 o'clock hour, we were covering issues of communication, which is a good starting point. We have decided so that everyone can respectfully communicate about these critical issues. So we have, and then at 4:30 to 5:30 or so, we have Pu'anani Rogers. She will be with us on air. And
well, she's here right now.
She is. Okay.
Aloha.
Hey.
Aloha.
Okay,
thanks
great.
For joining us.
Yeah. And we'll have, after 5 o'clock, we'll have the couple of the founders of this radio station who know exactly the types of benefits that they were looking for in founding KKCR, Kauai Community Radio. So Fred and Marge Dente will be with us.
Yay.
And I believe it's, Jimmy, about 4:45 we'll have Ray Catania with us.
That's correct.
Okay, Mr. Raymond Catania. So it's a full house today here at KKCR. And I want to jump right into introducing Michael Bonahan. Michael, thank you for coming back again this week to be on Out of the Box.
Pleasure to join you.
Okay. Let's see if we can get his levels a little higher. Michael, again, can you give us a little bit more? I know you are one of the leaders of the Mankind Project. That's how I have known you and come to respect you. You work also a founding member of the Boys to Men mentoring organization in Hawaii, as well as I know you have your own business, Wisdom Windfall. What else about you do we want to know before we jump back into our subjects?
Well, if we're going to have a discussion about race, half Lebanese and half Caucasian, and that's mixed European ancestry.
Right.
I've been living in Hawaii since 1967, and it's very unique that Hawaii is a very different place than the rest of the Union when it comes to race and relations. We are definitely have more colonialism than some of the other states, and also have a diverse cultural group of citizenry. We were very lucky to have so many people from different backgrounds and different cultures. So.
Absolutely.
But about me, that's all you need to know, unless you have any specific questions.
No, I think you bring up the important point, and that is one of the reasons why KKCR really wants to take advantage, if you will, of the situation that's going on to educate people. You know, we can watch the news and we can, read about the different really difficult issues that we are experiencing in the broader United States. And yet the state of Hawaii and the former Hawaiian nation is it is very unique. And that's why we want to look in the mirror and see what we can learn so that as a diverse culture, we can be as respectful and knowledgeable as possible. So, Michael, let's do a little recap. How would you say, in a few minutes or so, would you characterize last week's show, where we went, and what you think are the salient points?
Well, the most important thing about having a dialogue about race and relations is to have some guidelines around communication. And what we talked about last week is to just be aware that when we're talking at a cultural and institutional level, which is what racism is, it's a structural system. It's been around before we were all here, and it exists in unconscious and very visible ways. And then it's easy for us to take our own personal experience, or maybe the experience of one or two people of color that we know, and try to project that into the discussion when we talk about institutions and mm-hmm. culture. So the most important thing is just to sort of stay in those lanes of communication. We talked about the five different lanes of communication, levels of communication last week, and also to you know, everyone's point of view is valid, and to remember that each person has a different perspective. And just because a person doesn't know what you know or I know about racism when it comes to structure or culture or institutions doesn't mean that their point of view isn't valid. So everyone gets a chance to be heard as long as we're polite, civil, and we are aware that sometimes our intent doesn't land the way that we intended it to, and be open to learning how we can communicate that better.
Exactly. Good point. Bring up the five ways of communicating again. Let's just touch on those without digging into them.
So there's personal, interpersonal, group, institutional, and cultural, the five levels
yes.
of communication.
Yes. And what I would add to...
Interpersonal and personal are, personal for me is how I think and what my thoughts are and my judgments and beliefs. Interpersonal is about how I communicate those with you, with one other person. Group is three or more, and then we start getting into institutions, which is where the real issue of racism exists, is in institutions and culture. Whether it's the way that we design our policing guidelines or our policing roles, whether that's the way that that people of color have been historically excluded from the American dream, and those sort of things. So those are conversations that are happening at the meta level, at the 10,000, 40,000 foot level. But it's easy to get distracted by thinking, well, wait a minute, I've got a very wealthy black friend who's a doctor, and he's just as successful as anybody, so he doesn't experience racism. Mm. And so it's easy to take those sort of individual, interpersonal, anecdotal pieces and try to overlay them onto a discussion that's much larger.
Sounds complex, Michael. What are you saying? I'm kidding you. That's a little joke. Anyway, so yes, and I think in my mind, in addition to what you suggested earlier as ways to benefit communication, is to have an openness and an ability to listen. And as we talked about last week, the ouch and the oops of communication. Just revisit that for a moment. Michael, are you there? Let's see here. This would be a good time for me to introduce Dr. Kiahi. Hey there. Let's see here. Oh, we're getting a microphone up for you.
Aloha.
There we go. Okay, great.
Aloha, yeah, I'm here.
Great. And Alana. Alana sounds like a dial tone. Ladies and gentlemen, this is community radio. This is what it's about, is real people. We are your neighbors, and we are just people come down here, volunteer our time to try to fulfill you or try to inspire you with information, give you an opportunity to speak. And speaking of that, do we have Michael back?
Yes.
Michael, are you there?
I should be on the air.
All right. Michael, we got you. All right. So let's, Kiahi, what would you like to add in thinking about last week's show? Mm-hmm. I know that we all sat and had a little discussion after the show. We were all pretty excited, and I know there's been good feedback on the show. What has resonated with you over the last week with what we talked about with Michael between 5 and 6 p.m. last week on the Box?
It just became very aware to me how much within this, the context of the issues of racism and related issues, how much happens unconsciously,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we're just sort of, it's like being born into an environment that's a hostile environment. You don't really notice anything. And I'm just using the word hostile by analogy. I'm not saying that racism necessarily is hostile, but if it's the status quo, if it's what you, or sort of, it's become the norm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't matter if you're the perpetuator, perpetuating it or experiencing it, you may not notice it, you know? And you notice it as sort of as a cumulative effect, and where, certain groups are disadvantaged. And then when they examine closer, then they can kind of untangle the situation. And I think... this is, for me, it's been a great opportunity to sort of look at where I can be responsible for exactly what's happening. And being mixed race myself, I feel like I can be, I have the advantage of really tackling this issue from all sides, really.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, Poonan is going to ask a question.
Yes, I want to know then, where does it originate? Where does racism originate?
That's a good question. It's a good question.
Okay, I can tell you where I think.
Okay.
I think it's inherent. I think they're born with it.
Wow, that's very cynical and negative, Puanani. Gosh, I'm so shocked. All right,
but then I got the argument about, no, it is a learned thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. Right. I agree with that. I don't think a baby comes into this world
being learned as well.
You're playing devil's advocate yourself here. We were talking about that before the show. Do we have
All
Michael
right,
back?
So is there answer to my question?
Okay. Great. We will get into that when we're having our conversation with you. Thank you. I appreciate that. So, Michael, what haven't we talked about that you believe is important that could help us navigate the way forward? You know, we have another 15 minutes with you and your wisdom and your learned knowledge. What is it that you would suggest to us as we're mainly facilitators here? We'll talk about our experience, but really it's going to be about us just trying to facilitate a conversation that benefits the community. We will, by the way, folks, just a side note, we will be opening up the phone lines in the last half hour of the show to have concise questions and input for concise answers between the 5:30 and 6 p.m. hour here on Out of the Box. Michael, what would you say might help us navigate our ways forward?
Wow, you know, your in-studio guest, I think she's right. I know that some of it was tongue-in-cheek, but whether we're... To say we're born with it may not be exactly the right thing, but we're born into it. We're born into the systems of racism.
Right.
So even though we may think that we are immune to it or that we're not racist, unless we are actively working against it, then we are unconsciously and quietly colluding and supporting institutional racism. So it's just because of it exists around us. And our parents, you know, what's cool about it is that as we awaken as a species and as a society, that the more light's being shown on it, we're seeing more change. But our parents and our parents' parents were more racist than we are today, but it still exists. So we have to actively be aware of it and to see how it shows up unconsciously in our lives.
Excellent.
So one of the origins is it's passed on generation to generation then.
Right. Yeah.
Totally. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Thanks.
I think, can
you hang on, we'll get... There we go, Alana.
I think, like I said, I can't hear her. But from
Alana, start again.
Yeah, I think also just real quick about the origin of racism. I've been watching lots of videos lately, and I can't say that I know all the facts, but a lot of a common theme is that, I think in the 16th century, 17th maybe, when slavery and everything kind of started, mm-hmm. and they tried, and I think that racism was kind of invented as a way to excuse the super intense capitalism and using slave labor, et cetera. It's easier to classify people as like less than or better than, and everybody else be okay with it instead of it being like, no, why are we enslaving people? Why? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's when it was invented,
mm-hmm.
roughly.
However, I think originally it was just basically finding your own genealogy, according to that video.
Oh, yeah, in the beginning it was. Yeah.
It was a lot of genealogy. That's how you identify yourself.
Right,
right.
And your race. And then it changed.
Right.
And then it changed.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
To racism.
So it's part of the collective science behind human tendency to identify in groups. It's part of our social structure. You know, creating connection within people who are like us is much easier if we can create an us and a them.
Mm.
And so that's kind of the basis of it. And that's part of all of racism's beginning, is that it's inherently in us, but so it's sort of like a lizard brain thing. It's not necessarily a higher thinking thing.
Yeah,
it's in us because it's programmed into us, Michael.
Definitely. It's first of all, it exists inherently for us to try to feel like we want to belong, right? So initially, when we're born into the world, a sense of belonging and connection is critical. We're born into this free-falling space of, you know, what do I latch onto? And people that look like me are the easiest thing to latch onto.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a natural piece.
Mm-hmm.
However, then when you're born into a society where this has been going on for thousands of years, and then people, as Alana pointed out, use differences as a way to oppress or enslave other groups, then that's how racism sort of began to explode and become a tool that historically included people could use to continue to exclude people who have been historically excluded.
And I would suggest that is kind of a legacy of white supremacy.
And
yeah,
that, and that
really good point.
If you will, that, that desire to implement or use that tool of subjecting others to, if you will, it could be violent, it could be trauma, it could be both physical and psychological, but it is a tool for, and Dr. Kiahi and I were talking about this on the way up, the status quo. It could be used by those who benefit from the status quo to maintain power.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, I agree.
And I guess that
if you're part of that group,
right.
Sorry, Jimmy, but if you're part of that group,
correct.
What's the incentive to want to change the status quo?
And say that again. What is the incentive, or what is my incentive?
Yeah, so what if, as people who are part of the dominant culture, mm-hmm. let's say white people mm-hmm. and the white supremacist nation, mm-hmm. the question is, what is the incentive for somebody that belongs to that group to change?
Empathy.
And that's the real question.
Sorry, I had to say it.
Excellent.
Yeah. I think, if we can just feel for, you know, all other humans, and we're all related, we're all brothers and sisters of this earth, mm-hmm. If we could just have some empathy. And it's hard. I think that it's been easy for people to kind of brush things aside, and, you know, but now it's the time to all talk about it, get it all out, and hopefully some empathy can come out of it. That's my thought.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that happens culturally is, and we've seen this, or at least I've observed this with the straight and gay struggle that's gone on. The more people who started to know someone who was gay, the more they started to go, well, maybe it's not so bad, or here's my friend, I want to protect my friend. And so that's one of the benefits of a culture like in Hawaii, where you have so many different groups
exactly.
mixing together.
The melting pot.
Exactly. Yes, I agree. Dr. Kiahi, it looks like you have something on your brain. What do you got?
Yeah. No, I just wanted to add, speaking about the origins of racism, I agree with everything that was said. I want to add, there's an element of, and I believe this comes through our parenting, you know, through the generations. There's an element of adopting something as true that's actually not true. And that has to do with seeing something that's actually equal as not equal. Mm. And I'll give you an example how we can easily make that mistake. I don't know if you've heard this riddle, what weighs more, a pound of feathers or a pound of lead? You know, I mean,
right.
You could easily answer that incorrectly, you know, and therein lies how easily we can make errors in judgment, you know, because we think that something is different from another thing,
mm-hmm.
so it can't be equal. So, I mean, try to convince a child, for example, that feathers, 1 pound of feathers is the same as 1 pound of lead. They'll
right.
they'll say, like, no way. I mean, you know, it's you know, and
some adults too.
Right. And so that is sort of something that we can transcend that. And I'm going to, you know, that's something that we need to transcend. You know, we can no longer adopt things for face value mm-hmm. when in fact, they're actually false. You know, it's false to think that one race is worth more than another race. Or if I have more money in my bank account, that means I have more of a say, you know, this whole, and it's in a way you could say it's inherent in the system, but it's just, that's just how the status quo, as Jimmy has said, you know, if that's convention, you know, if that's what's considered normal, you know, for example, in this country, what's normal is to be morbidly obese. But that doesn't mean it's healthy.
Right,
know?
Right. Exactly. Michael, before we let you go, bottom of the hour, I want to ask something that I struggle with a little bit. I guess it's not my personal struggle so much, but I see it in society. And that is, how do you approach someone? Let's say you're in a family gathering, and one of your relatives starts going off with some racist kind of, you know, language. I think a lot of people's tendency is to jump right in and argue with them and get emotional and be angry and everything like that. Whereas, and I have the sense that there's some listening involved that's necessary, and yet You don't want to enable them. So what's the middle path that you see in that regard? Because I believe that that is a stumbling block for people communicating about these issues authentically and honestly.
Well, you know, I get that question asked a lot. My dad is racist or my aunt is racist. How do I talk to him? How do I go to a family dinner? And ultimately, you have to remember that racism is not something that somebody chooses. It's something that sort of like develops in them. And how severe it develops is often based upon what their own personal life struggle is. So you're going to see a lot of people that look as if they're overtly racist and they're just unforgiving. And it's because they say, well, you care about this group of people, and what about me? You don't care about me. I feel excluded. Like you start listing the list of the disparities between African Americans and people of black ancestry in America compared to whites, you're definitely going to find a white person who can tick off a bunch of those disparities too. But it's not because of their race that those disparities exist. It's for other factors. So, like you said, hearing them out is important. However, it's important to also have warrior boundaries. So if you're in a group of people that you can't have a discussion with or that you're feeling seriously offended by because of their racist statements or stances, you always have the right to excuse yourself. So I don't encourage entering into an argument. I think leaving space, because remember, the goal is connection. And the more that you can stay connected to people who have yet to wake up to the importance of us fighting or being anti-racist and fighting structural racism is by staying in relationship with them. For us to make them enemy or part of the problem does nothing to solve the issue. So if you can stomach it, stay in the conversation, share as much data and personal feelings that you have as possible, and then walk the talk. That's the most, if there's one thing I'd like to impart to you before I leave the show today is to walk the talk. If you truly believe that you are not racist and that you want to make a difference in the world, then enter into relationships with people who are different than you. How many people of color, if you're a white person, how many people of color are you in business with? I'm not saying you're selling things to you, but you actually have business partnerships with, where you're risking capital, where you're risking your time and energy and effort to be in relationship with people who are different. And if you're men, that means being in business with women. If you're a white person, it means being in business with a person of a different race than you. And so those things, those are real live action steps. And that's going to take effort. So walk the talk, as opposed to inviting people who are different than you to come over to your world, ask if you could come and join them in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the most important thing is to remember is that it's about bringing my awareness to somebody else's situation from a place of privilege, because white people do have that privilege.
And, Michael, I wanted to ask you, what you said earlier made me think about in regards to relations and, if you will, nurturing the relationship to maybe make a difference. And how, if you will, incredibly not useful social media is regarding that. So I think I won't ask you about that, but I would like to ask you before you go to talk a little bit about being an ally, because I think what you were just describing and what Rick was talking about a little bit lends itself to think about and segue into the notion of what is an ally and what does that mean and the importance of being an ally.
That's a really good question. You know, good allyship is about listening. It's about asking, how can I help, as opposed to making up how you can help. Because if you just say, hey, I think this group or this person needs this, that's called a dysfunctional rescue.
Mm-hmm.
You might get it right, but ultimately it's about listening and then saying specifically, how can I support? And if it's something you can do, doing it, whether it's marching in a Black Lives Matter protest, I encourage you to do it peacefully, by the way. Or whether it's being in a deeper relationship with somebody else, being an ally is that simple. Now, being an ally who fights, that's about activism. So if you're someone who's willing to put your capital, your privilege, your political, your social, and your financial capital on the line for people who are different, that's activism. So There's two choices, allyship's the beginning, and activism would be the goal if you want to see true structural change.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Michael, we're wrapping this up here for you. I want to thank you again for your participation, your guidance, your mana'o in this vital conversation and the evolution of our culture toward being more enlightened, if you will. Thank you for that. Do you have any words you want to leave us with?
Just a lot of gratitude, you know, to Jimmy and you and Dr. Keahi and Alana and all your guests in the station for you know, keeping the lines of communication open and taking the risk. So a lot of gratitude and respect for what you're doing.
Thank you. People, if they want to contact Michael Bonahan, they can go to his website, wisdomwindfall.com, and you'll find Michael Bonahan there. Again, Michael, thank you so much, and we hope to have you on again on Out of the Box.
Mahalo.
Thank you, Michael. Mahalo.
Thank you. Mahalo.
And we're going to do just a real quick off the card. It's 59 seconds long, but it's coming from the County of Kauai.
Sounds good.
The County of Kauai announces our household hazardous waste collection events for residents only. Acceptable items include pesticides, solvents, car products, oil-based paints, and more. Collections will take place on 2 days, Saturday, June 27th in Kilauea behind Ininaho Mini Golf Course and in Kapaa at the base yard by the Kauai Recycles drop bins, and on Sunday, June 28th in Lahui at the Kauai Resource Center and in Hanapepe next to the Hanapepe Refuse Transfer Station. Events are from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Note that latex paint is not toxic and will not be accepted. Our contractor will be observing social distancing practices, and we ask that you wear a mask if you need to exit your vehicle. For more information, call 241-4841. That's 241-4841, or log on to our website at kauai.gov/recycling. Help keep our garden aisle green. Bring your household hazardous waste to our June 27th and 28th event. This event is for residents only. No commercial or farm chemicals will be accepted.
All righty, we go back to live in the booth.
Here we are.
Nani, thank you for joining us here on Out of the Box.
Thank you for inviting me.
Sure. And I was just going to share with our listeners, because Auntie Nani, you and for Out of the Box listeners, you might recognize the voice, because Auntie Nani has been on KKCR for many, many years. Your first...
Since the beginning.
Yeah, I was going to say, your first involvement, tell us a little bit.
That was a show called The Tower Patch, because it was a community-based kind of a... program where we would say that all of our conversations and networking took place in the low E, in the tarot patch when we were out there pulling tarot. That's where community meetings are held.
Mm-hmm.
People do discuss
that. While you're doing work.
So that's why I picked that name for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this kind of a show.
Yeah.
Where we invite people to call in.
And now you do a show on the first Monday?
First Monday. Every first Monday from 4 to 6, and it's called Living Sovereign. And I think it's very, very important for people to know that we are sovereign people living in sovereign lands. It's just camouflage right now. And so, you know, I wish I know. I wonder if some people are listening that listen to my show, because I want to say hi to them and thanks for tuning in to In the Box with Jimmy Trujillo. And keep tuning in to KKCR. This is the best community-based radio station that we have anywhere, I think. It is all community. It's supported by community. It's run by people from the community. Especially prominent people in the community, just people like us.
Just a regular kind guys.
Just a regular
folks
kind
like
guys,
us.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think our people will get a lot out of it, because we're like them. They're going to be listening to themselves probably talking whenever we share our mana'o. So,
well, I want to share with listeners that in our conversation on Monday, we talked about doing R&R in Paradise segment during your show one Monday or sometime to talk story, maybe specifically to the, if you will, the experience of
Right. And
from the Kanaka Maoli experience, yeah. that perspective.
That topic comes up in my show.
Oh, absolutely.
Every so often. So it is an issue that we discuss. okay, what I wanted to say about getting back to the racism thing, living on Kauai, a small island, and a very sheltered life, I would say, because my parents were very strict, and we were a Mormon family, and very religious. I was raised on you know, the Bible and the Book of Mormon, and I never regret it. I don't go to church now, but all the stuff I learned before, I am using in my life today. Mm. And it's all good principles that reflect loving people, respecting people, honoring people. And our culture, we honor our kupunas a lot. And so one of the biggest issues that I've had to face was the desecration of our Na'ivi kupuna. Now, is that racist when they desecrate our graves? Is that a racist act, do you think? Is it because we are not white?
I'm going to suggest that it is a racist act. It is an act of violence, and certainly in my mind, a desecration.
Right.
And the only reason it happens is because, if you will, the offender feels like they can do that.
Ugh.
Or it's teenagers.
Can I puke right now? Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, that is so arrogant.
We talked about some other things, Punani, about environmental destruction and whether that is water diversions and things like, are those racist acts? What do you think about that?
I think it is, because I'm an indigenous person and it is harming me.
Mm-hmm.
It's impacting me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I have to do what I do.
Mm. So our listeners who might not listen on your Monday show or not know much, what do you do? What do you do in our community?
What do I do?
How would you self-identify, if you will?
I sing and play ukulele.
You're a cultural practitioner.
Yes, I'm a cultural practitioner. Mm-hmm. I protect our Ivi kupuna.
Mm-hmm.
I go to jail or I go to court for them.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, I give my life for them. And a lot of that is happening, and it's hurts so much, Rick.
Yes, I understand.
It hurts so much. I don't want to ever see that happen to my kupuna's graves.
Mm.
And
have they caught someone doing that?
Developers. People building million-dollar homes.
Now, okay, yes, of course.
Well, and it could be individual contractors with the big home, or it could be, if you will, a government operation,
yes.
Like a bike path going over the sands of Wailua.
Right.
Sure.
Exactly.
Right. And we got to replace the antiquated cesspool. What do we got to do? We're going to dig up kupuna in the process.
It's racist, right?
I mean, it's hard to...
I think it's arguable
that maybe it's not, but it is a facet of white supremacy, disregard indigenous people's either place or practice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in my opinion.
Okay,
I'd like
good.
To talk about a few things that I think are racist.
Yeah, please bring it up.
Oh, right on.
Hawaiian religion was outlawed in 1831.
Okay, that's a good
one. I don't know any Hawaiians that practice our religion. Not even me.
Mm.
That's racism. Mm.
You're Hawaiian.
Our language?
Hawaiian language was banned in 1896. Banned.
Yes.
In our own land.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the language that I learned first.
That's right.
Hard to argue that that's not racist.
Hard to argue.
Right, that is not an expression of white supremacy.
Hard to argue, yeah. The very act of voting to organize a lawful Hawaiian government is deemed illegal under the laws of the United States.
Treason.
We cannot organize a government without it being called unconstitutional.
Mm.
Yeah, because it's race-based.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, so these are, you know...
Perfect.
These are things that have been, since the 1800s, still is still. Do you know anybody? Auntie, you know anybody that practices the ancient Hawaiian religion?
The ancient Hawaiian religion, somewhat.
I don't know.
You got to go look for them, though. You got to go find the kahus.
Yeah.
And those people that got this knowledge passed down to them.
Very few.
But very few
have not embraced Christianity. Very few. Very few.
True.
That's not
true.
Hawaiian.
Right.
That's not a Hawaiian thing.
Right, right. Yeah. But yeah. I think Auntie Kehau, Kaolani.
Kekua.
Yeah.
And I've just a note
Kehaulani
here.
Kaolani Kaolanui?
No. No, Kekua.
Yeah.
I was just informed that Kumu Kehau, who's on KKCO Tuesday mornings, she practices the ancient Hawaiian religion. So, God bless her.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But I don't know if
but
that's
very
exactly
few.
The religion he's talking about, though, yeah?
Mm, from Kahiko times.
She's talking pre-Christianity religion, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, if you want to take racism to outlaw someone's religion, that's
language
know, based on their race. That's
yeah.
That's pretty. That's not even.
Wow.
That's not even. That's like First Amendment stuff. You know. I mean, even the Constitution recognizes that, and but it's been completely disregarded by, and it's become status quo. You know, even Hawaiian-blooded people will dismiss their own religion. You know, from their culture.
Yeah.
In favor of another culture's religion. Yeah. That's. Yeah, like I said, I don't even practice it, and I consider myself an advocate and a cultural practitioner. So, that says a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, yeah. I mean,
it's not religion for me; it's spirituality.
I think
I don't go. I mean, it's not an organized religion. My beliefs. It's just.
To broaden the conversation just a little bit, not that we need to dig into it, but this is the pattern of Anglo-European people on the North American continent. So they did to that's the same thing they did to the
Indians.
Native American people.
Yeah.
And no doubt if we looked at other cultures around the world, indigenous cultures. Probably in Australia and New Zealand and India and different places, we'd find the same pattern.
Mm-hmm.
One more thing. I think it's racist for other people to identify me, which is what governments have tried to do with our people. They try to call us Native Americans. They try to call us Native Hawaiians. They try to call us Americans or whatever, whatever. But that's not who I identify myself as.
Who do you identify yourself as, Puanani?
Kanaka O'iwi or Kanaka Maoli. You know, Kanaka Maoli, if you look in the dictionary, it says you have to be pure Hawaiian to be a Kanaka Maoli. However, in the 21st century, and since I've been in the movement of independence for Hawaii, which is...
Yes.
That word has changed, and it now means anybody that has Hawaiian blood in this political movement that I'm in. Yeah. If I call you Kanaka Maoli, that means you got Hawaiian blood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that I identify myself as that, as a Kanaka Maoli and a Hawaiian national. My nation is Hawaii, not America.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, great.
So don't try to identify me and tell me what I am.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I know what I am. I know where I come from. I know where I was born. I know my land of my birth. I know where my mother and dad I buried.
Mm.
And so, solid feet on this aina. And that's why I fight for it. Mm. I fight for this aina and all our resources. And stop trying to take it away from us.
Mm.
So
our lands and our waters, stealing.
Let's turn that around. What do you want to do in order to power the Hawaiian people?
I want independence.
Okay. All right, keep going. List off the things that you want to do that would uplift your people.
Why? Because my nation was stolen from me. So that needs to be corrected. All the wrongs against our people has to come to a forefront now, and each one should be corrected.
Yes.
Alana, you had some?
Oh, I just had a little side point that I recently learned from my partner is that basically a way that they're able to oppress Hawaiian people is to not consider them indigenous. Unlike Native American tribes, though, they're not able to claim land because they say, like, it's something really silly. It says, the Hawaiian kingdom was not invaded or colonized by
Native.
Because we were not colonized, we were just made straight up into a state that we don't, that Hawaiian, Native Hawaiians don't have the same kind of indigenous rights as they should. That's one thing that's used against.
I'm sorry, I really missed the whole.
That's a good. We accidentally had a caller go on the air for just a moment.
And just
to answer that question, we will be opening up the phone lines between 5:30 and 6 p.m. Alana, I'm sorry, I stepped on you. Go again.
Oppressor. I don't want to get super into it, but doesn't deem Hawaiian people as indigenous, even though they are. So that. Because if you were, then they'd be able to make their own government as Native Americans are. But
right.
So that they like it's a silly loophole that's used to oppress more,
right.
I think.
Well, and part of that silly loophole, right, is this notion that you've got to have 51%
the cocoa. 50% of the cocoa, yeah.
90. How does that work, right?
I don't know.
Right.
You can't measure anything like that for one thing. We're not a liquid measurement. You can't tell me I'm quarter or 50 or what a Hawaiian. If you got one drop, you got it.
Alana, what you got?
Oh, we have a question on the line.
We have Raymond? That's who we're waiting for?
Sure, probably. We'll just see.
Aloha, caller. You're live on the air.
Sorry, caller. Could you please call back? I'm not used to doing the transfer from the office line. Yeah, what's on line? Oh, maybe.
Are you still there? Do we got...
All
right, y'all.
All right.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
And
you've got a question that you'd like to ask.
Actually, I just wanted to share something with you.
Okay,
brief comments, please.
Okay, I have a daughter who's a teenager. She's lived here her whole life. She's very into the Hawaiian culture. I sent her to Hawaiian Charter School. She is Caucasian. Just recently, I realized that she had written on the back of her.
We're dropping
She's
you.
Out.
Yeah, but can you either stay close to your handheld mic there, your handheld device? We lost the last bit of what you said.
I'm not going. That's why I'm having a hard time.
Do you have your radio
can you
on?
Hear me?
We can hear you, but there's a pause.
I'm very far away from my radio, so. Anyway, she had written on the back of her truck, Lives Matter, and it kind of freaked me out a little bit because I've been following this Black Lives Matter thing, and I tried to discuss with her that that was going to be taken badly by a lot of people and that that wasn't appropriate, but because in all her years going to Hawaiian Charter School, she's never really experienced African-American racism because there's not very many African-Americans here.
Mm-hmm.
But what she has experienced is a lot of racism towards her.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she's made a lot of really close friends that are, you know, Hawaiian, and she loves them very much and they love her, she definitely has felt like, you know, she's howly.
Mm-hmm.
And
can I just interrupt you? Because one second, just to be clear, what did she write on the back of the truck?
Lives matter.
Just lives matters.
Just lives matter.
Mm-hmm.
She's never lived in a city where there's a lot of Black people, which I have. I get it.
Mm.
She doesn't get it. Living here in Hawaii, she hasn't experienced that kind of racism, she's not really fully understanding it from a personal experience. What she has experienced is that she hasn't felt like the one that has been included or the cool kid because she's the white girl, the girl that gets sunburned, you know, the girl that doesn't get to stand in front when she knows the hula and or that particular dance. And I don't feel like she's racist, but she just doesn't understand it. And this whole racism thing is so complex. And
it
so
really deep. Is
very
complex.
Mm-hmm.
So many different directions.
Caller, you have delivered a couple of very salient points. I thank you for your call, and we're going to bounce those around now. Stay tuned to your
radio
for some of the answers that we have to those important points. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So there's two things that I get out of that call, and one is then very valuable. So here's a young woman, as described to us. She is from a European culture.
Caucasian.
She has been exposed to the local environment,
right.
And yet she doesn't understand, according to her mom, she doesn't understand the challenges of, say, Black people would have in our culture, in the United States culture, Western culture, and so that's one thing. The other is that she experiences racism. Now that's a point I want to get into with you, Puanani. But I think Kiahi, I see his brain turning, and Alana, I want both of you to be able to feedback into what she was saying there. Our caller.
Well, one thing that struck me, which is this is new information for me, that's actually not racism. We call that backlash. Certainly discrimination.
What is not racism?
Discrimination against white people,
mm-hmm.
Which are, as we were informed, in our prior discussions.
Last week's show, we talked about the difference between racism and backlash, mm-hmm. and that's a very important point. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Jahi.
So white people being, the so-called dominant race, cannot experience racism. That is, by definition, my understanding, that's not possible. So it's not that they don't experience hardship or hostility or
the hurt associated with some type of, if you will, racial hatred or bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What is backlash, though, Kiahi?
Backlash is when I would say that the dominant race experiences that type of discrimination, that kind of maltreatment, mm-hmm. from the other race that's been a minority race or a race that's been mm-hmm. oppressed, mm-hmm. whether through deliberated actions or just neglect or frustration or whatever it is.
Guilty.
And to frame it slightly differently, that further is a further detriment to the race that's been the subject of discrimination or of racism, because generally they'll get punished for it, and they'll experience more hardship or worse, feel like it's validating, and so maybe they don't get punished the first time around, but so they think that, oh, it's okay, I should do this, I'm justified, and then you have a whole community that is behaving this way, and then the community just further suffers. And that's a really important point, and I think that we all need to sort of recognize that dynamic and do something about it. I really think that Kuleana is on all of us to actually see what's actually going on, rather than just to live according to the status quo. And again, what's inherent in the system doesn't mean we can't change it.
That's excellent, excellent. I want to go to Alana. Alana, your father is Black.
Yeah.
Okay. So how do you react to some of what the caller put on the table there?
It's tough. I'm still gathering my thoughts, really, and trying to think of the best thing to say. But the first thing quickly that comes to mind that's not the most, I don't know, I'll just say. But if to the girl who's struggling in school, as she was going to Native Hawaiian school, if she decides to go to college on the mainland and maybe try to get a job in the mainland or work in any type of office, any type of corporate setting, your whiteness will be your advantage. So just wait for it.
And that speaks to the nature of
privilege. Because I've experienced a total opposite story of
right.
growing up on the mainland, mm-hmm. And not even with my Black family, but just having the outside world tell me that I'm less than or et cetera, or expect, mm-hmm. Different mm-hmm. things of me that I didn't quite understand. But so I totally get it, but I'm just saying to her as words of encouragement, that in her later life it won't be as much of a problem.
You might outgrow this.
Yeah, but so otherwise, of course I want to say something deep and great here, but And with the whole Black Lives Matter versus All Lives Matter, that's like a very big debate. There's so much information about it on the internet, so I'm not going to... I know that it's definitely, like they say, you know, right now COVID-19 matters, not necessarily the Black Plague. Or right now, Black people are getting murdered literally in their sleep in their own homes, getting hung from trees in 2020. Can you imagine getting lynched?
It's unbelievable.
And so, I don't even know how to, but so that's a whole other debate. But otherwise, I only have love and love for everybody. So, I don't want to like go on a negative tangent at all. Just hang in there and it'll all make sense later. And you know, whatever pain you went through will make you able to relate to other people later, so try not to cling on to it and just try to open your mind and educate yourself. Look at, you know, try to read up on things on the internet or talk to people.
You're a compassionate woman. Thank you.
We've got a caller who is a frequent caller, and she's going to keep it really short, she said.
Okay. Yeah, here we go.
That's you.
You're listening out of the box.
You're live.
Aloha. Thank you. Y'all talking on this. I just want to say it's so great to hear your voice, Nancy Kumanani.
Oh.
And I would like to offer again that for us who live on Kauai, and especially born on Kauai, I feel it's disrespectful to Kauai to call the United States of America the man. And so I just like to call the fight the man. But we'll listen. Thank you so much.
Mahalo.
Okay.
There we go. And I think if her phone broke up, I think she was trying to say that it's disrespectful to call the mainland the mainland.
I'm right with you. It's a button.
That's
for me.
That's right.
Okay.
I call it America.
Continental U.S.
Continent.
I call that America. I call that America.
Continent. Okay.
And why?
I like it when people call it Turtle Island.
You know?
Moku Honu.
And why? For me, it's because it's a psychological tie. They're trying to tie people of Hawaii to the North American when there is no geographic tie. It's just this thing they're trying to get ingrained in you, and everybody uses it. So I really try to not use the mainland.
I was ingrained.
Yeah.
I grew up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just heard it, but now we'll change it. Continental.
Yeah.
And sorry, last comment I just heard. In general, kids are mean. Like, kids just don't think much, and they call each other names, et cetera. So it won't be as bad once you get out of school.
There we go. So we are getting up to the top of the hour. I'm going to play something off the car. We'll listen to you, and then hopefully when we come back after the top of the hour stuff, mm-hmm. we'll have Raymond Catania on the line. So hint, hint, Uncle Ray, if that's you, you'll be calling in very shortly. So here we go.
You're listening out of the box.
Right. We truly want to grow. If we truly want to be the land of the free, if we truly want to be great, we gotta get a little uncomfortable. Should I call black people black or African American? The correct answer is black, because African American can be offensive and inaccurate. There are Jamaicans in America. There are Cubans in America. There are African Americans or black people who don't identify as African because their heritage was stripped from them during slavery. And so that calling them African can be reminiscent of what was stripped from them. Furthermore, black is simply an adjective nearly describing one's skin color, very much so like white. What is white privilege? The simplest definition is to simply say, white privilege is not saying that your life as a white person hasn't been hard. White privilege is simply saying your skin color, it hasn't been a contributing factor to the difficulty in your life. White privilege is being able to live your life unconsciously. Well, what do I mean by unconsciously? I, as a black man, live in an affluent neighborhood in Austin, Texas. If I get to my mailbox and I see a white woman walking up or a white man, I have to sit in my car. I consciously sit in my car until they check their mail and leave, because I don't want to be perceived as a threat. I, as a black man, calculate every move that I make. Black Lives Matter a means to All Lives Matter? And the answer is obviously yes. Right now, we're in COVID-19, facing the greatest pandemic since the Spanish flu. We still care about cancer, we still care about ALS, we still care about HIV, but you see, we're exerting so much of our attention to solving this imminent disease, because until we can solve this imminent disease, all the other diseases are going to be compounded by this imminent disease. It's the same thing with Black Lives Matter. We're trying to solve this imminent disease, not of the body, but of the mind. I created Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man to encourage the world to have uncomfortable conversations. I was a professional athlete. The only reason I played at the highest level in my sport is because I have some real uncomfortable practices. I have some real uncomfortable games. But the only way we will be able to thrive and be able to grow is if we get uncomfortable. Because we can live in ignorance, but ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is actually killing, literally, a people group of black people in America. So while half our world can live in ignorance, I don't have that luxury. And my black brothers and sisters don't have that luxury. So we all need to get a little uncomfortable so we can grow.
The County of Kauai announces our household hazardous waste collection events for residents only. Acceptable items include pesticides, solvents, car products, oil-based paints, and more. Collections will take place on 2 days, Saturday, June 27th in Kilauea behind a Ninaho mini golf course and in Kapaa at the base yard by the Kauai Recycles drop bins, and on Sunday, June 28th in Lahui at the Kauai Resource Center and in Hanapepe next to the Hanapepe Refuse Transfer Station. Events are from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Note that latex paint is not toxic and will not be accepted. Our contractor will be observing social distancing practices, and we ask that you wear a mask if you need to exit your vehicle. For more information, call 241-4841. That's 241-4841, or log on to our website at kauai.gov/recycling. Help keep our garden aisle green. Bring your household hazardous waste to our June 27th and 28th event. This event is for residents only. No commercial or farm chemicals will be accepted.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K205 FM Honolulu.
Right on. And you are listening to Kauai Community Radio, and this Out of the Box special is made possible by KKCR sustaining members in partnership with these good folks from Emerald Isle Properties, Bill Fernandez, Kilauea Bakery.
Emerald Isle Properties, serving Kauai's real estate needs courteously and professionally since 1988. Jim and Harvest Edmonds aim to restore hope to the families of Kauai by founding PAL, Permanently Affordable Living Kauai, a nonprofit dedicated to providing homes and sustainable living solutions. 808-443-8839 or www.propertieskauai.com.
Announcing Kauai author Bill Fernandez's new novel, Conquest. Our hero Kalani's peaceful settlement is tragically short-lived while Hawaii's unification wars rage on. Royal threats lead to historical battles at Waikiki and Nu'uanu as Kalani seeks vengeance against mysterious, tattooed warriors. What more is our hero willing to risk? More information about Conquest at KauaiBillFernandez.com.
Kilauea Bakery and Pizza is happy to announce they are back open, providing safe takeout service for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. Fresh baked wholesale orders and cakes also available. Welcome back, Kauai. Kilauea Bakery and Pizza in the historic Kung Lung Center, 828-2020. Full menu at KilaueaBakery.com.
And that's a big mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Second hour of this Out of the Box special, where we are experiencing a little R&R in paradise, race and relations on the Garden Island. And we have in the booth a full house with Auntie Nani Rogers. Fred Dente's getting his headphones dialed in. Rick C., if you will, running interference between the guests and the technical difficulties. Dr. Keahi and Alana, thank you so much for helping with the phones. And our first guest for the second hour, Raymond Catania. Raymond, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us, Raymond. Appreciate the opportunity to hear a little bit. While we were running all of our stuff, Auntie Nani had mentioned a number of different ethnic groups in Hawaii and their experiences with race, racism, and relations. We know. There we go. So go ahead, Nani, one more time. Put it out there.
So, hey, Ray, how about the Filipinos? You guys get any racism?
Of course we get. Of course we get some people who think it's kind of stupid.
Hey, Raymond, before we get going, Raymond, please introduce yourself and tell us a little about you.
Okay, Auntie Nani knows me well, and I enjoyed listening to her and everybody else. But I'm basically a social justice liberates activist my whole life.
Yay!
You know, and, you know, and I was going to talk about my some of my experiences with racism and white supremacy. In particular, I'm going to mention the Hanapipi Massacre. I'm not going to give a long presentation on that, and I'm going to mention about the Massey case, you know, two situations in Hawaii that have really impacted me and impacted the people of Hawaii, you know, the various races, Hawaiians and everyone else that were slaving on the plantations. But I'd like to give a little bit of a situation that happened to me when I was younger. When I was going to school, there were very few Filipino teachers. You know, never even have Hawaiian teachers, you know.
Right.
And we were trapped according to race. The kids on the bottom, it was like XYZ. The kids on the bottom were the brown kids. Hawaiians, Filipinos, Puerto Ricans, Samoans, you know. And we were on the bottom. The people in the middle were like... they had some Japanese and Asians and Haoles, and the very people at the top was Asian and Haoles. But we were on the bottom. And I remember what happened was in one of my classes, because I moved up to the middle, and we had a lot of Haoles in the class, and they were children of military men, military men. And some one in particular, he was a son of an officer. And I had a teacher by the name of Dr. Hidalgo. He was the only Filipino teacher I ever did have.
Hmm.
And he spoke with a heavy, heavy, heavy accent. He used to roll his R's, you know. So anyway, he would tell me stuff like, Raymond, take your seat. You know, so he would roll those R's. And
Raymond.
Everybody in the classroom would be laughing, yeah. And, you know, I didn't like him because he was pretty conservative. You know, he supported the war in Vietnam, and I didn't, you know. But I remember one time, one of the kids, a Haole kid, whose father was a... an officer in Vietnam, you know, he was an infantry officer, asked Mr. Hidalgo, hey, Hidalgo, you eat dog? That's what he asked him. You eat black dog? And the whole class laughed. And my heart sank. And my head hit the table and, oh, my God. You know, what the hell is this? So, but what happened,
Raymond, one point, brother.
Yeah.
Is that is a slur against Filipino people. I want to make that clear for people who are listening. So go ahead.
Yeah, we eat black dog, okay? We eat raw goat, we eat black dog, all that kind of stuff. Empty nani notes.
Okay? Yeah.
So anyway, what happened was, I'm kind of laughing too, because my friends are here laughing with me. But what happened was that... Dr. Hidalgo told the young man, he says, now, wait a second. If your father was in the forest in Vietnam, in the jungle, and they had nothing to eat, he would kill that black dog and feed his men, so that him and his men could come home one day to be with his family like you. You know? The guy shut up. So when he said, if you're hungry, you gotta eat. You know, so... But I remember hearing that, and I was really proud of Dr. Hidalgo because he stood his ground.
Mm.
But the point that I'd like to make was that we eat black dog, yeah? We eat raw goat, you know, and we eat a lot of crazy food. But that's what I grew up hearing when I was younger. But there's two things that I'd like to bring up in particular. One was the Hanapipi Massacre that happened in September 9, 1924, when 16 Filipinos were killed by the plantation bosses in Makueli Plantation.
Wow.
They were Visayan, and they were fighting for increase in wages from $1 to $2 a day and working from 10 hours to 8 hours, you know, and getting housing and medical and stuff like that. And what the employers had done was that they pitted the Filipino ethnic groups against each other. And that's what racists do.
Mm.
They always get people fighting each other. So they had the Visayans fighting the Ilocano.
Mm.
And what happened was that the Ilocanos were recruited as strike breakers. And two Ilocano young boys were riding a bicycle, and they got captured by the Visayans. And so what happened, the police came in, okay, and they came in mostly with Hawaiian sharpshooters, yeah, because they're pitting the Hawaiians against the Filipinos. Okay, that's what the Big Five used to do. And so what happened, a battle ensued, and 16 Filipinos had died, you know, four sheriffs. 16 Filipinos had died. 15 were Visayan and one was Ilocano, and those are ethnic differences. They speak a different language. They're all Filipinos, but they have ethnic differences. So what happened was that eventually they were buried, but nobody knew where they were buried. You see, so it took almost 100 years before we found out where they were buried. And they were in unmarked graves.
Yeah.
And the Advertiser and some Honolulu papers reported it, but they had the names all wrong of the strikers that got killed. And in the Garden Island, our favorite paper here, they didn't talk about the Hanapipi massacre at all. You know, In fact, if you go to the gravesite, you don't see any names there. So what they did was that they had to be signed self-censor. And eventually what happened was that the Filipinos were made ashamed that they were rebelling. You know, like how Trump says that there's thugs in the street and rioters in the street. Well, that's what the press did to us, to the Filipino laborers, said that we were rioters and troublemakers and killers and this and that. And so eventually a lot of the Visayans, they moved back to the Philippines, and some even moved to California. But till this day of December of last year was when we found the graves where they were buried in in right above the Veterans Cemetery.
There's a documentary now, isn't there? I believe there's a documentary about that.
There's a documentary coming out, that's being worked on.
Mm-hmm.
But us, the group that I'm with is myself, Michael Miranda, Catherine Lowe, Carl Lowe, even Fern is with us, Fern Holland, and Dale Shimamura. You know, we're the ones that put it together. And what we did find the graves with the help of some company, Japanese guy. He owns what you call Radar, and he was able to find where the bodies were buried. His worker, who's a Hawaiian Filipino guy, found it for us. And he used divining rods and equipment, but they found these coffins for us. So eventually what we're going to do is that we're going to mark that place with their names. But we're not going to put their names yet until we're ready to, block it off and put a higher fence. But we know where the area is now. And so after 90 years, we finally found their bodies. And that is real racism.
Raymond? Violent. Raymond, I want to encourage you to get to your second point in a moment, but I want to ask you something I think it's important. You referred to the Big Five, and I think that's important because that is a group of the oppressors that were chiefly responsible for much of the racism and oppression around the planet for a long time. So before we get to your other point, expound on that a little bit? Who were the Big Five?
The largest five corporations in Hawaii at the time, which included Alexander and Baldwin. That's one of them. COH Davies. I can't remember all, but those are the largest landowning companies.
A and B.
Castle and Cook.
CNC.
That helped to overthrow the Hawaiian government. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're very much against the Hawaiians, and they were part of the overthrow, you know. So those guys, the very same people that screwed over the workers were the very ones that overthrew the Hawaiian people. Yeah?
Yes.
That's right.
And that's another form of racism.
Yes.
So, well, and
we
Raymond...
We got something in common with the Hawaiians. We first cousins. Because they got their land ripped off from them and their country ripped off from them. And they brought us over to slave on the land that they stole.
Mm.
And then our relationship is land-based. And for myself, I love the Hawaiian people. I love their culture, and I will do anything to support them.
You have been, Raymond.
Yeah, and Auntie Nani knows that as well.
Yeah.
So the thing is that's the first thing I wanted to talk about. The other thing that I want to talk about is the Massey case. That happened in September 1931 when Thalia Massey, who was a socialite and the wife of a military officer, claimed that she was brutally raped by Hawaiians, you know, and through eventually it was proven that she wasn't raped by Hawaiians. She wasn't raped by anybody. She was actually beaten up by her husband's friends, you know, who were messing with her. This is a Thalia Massey case. You guys can look this up in Wikipedia. But the thing is that they had five local people that they picked up. And this is the first time they started using the word local, because the white elite through the military that was running Hawaii were aghast at the interracial mixing between the Chinese and the Hawaiians and the Japanese and everything. So five young men were arrested, and one of them, Kahahawai, Joe Kahahawai, he was eventually tortured and killed. And then he didn't have nothing to do with the raping this Thalia Massey. But what the white elites were calling for was blood. And they went against him because he was pure Hawaiian. They had two more part Hawaiians, but he was a pure Hawaiian guy. And what happened was that they went after him and they killed him. And they tortured him. And what happened was that Thalia Massey's husband, the lieutenant, and her mother, they got away with it. The people that killed Joe Kahawai, they got away with it, and they were let go. You know, so that's another form of racism that the local people in Hawaii remember. And they talked about Hawaii being a, you know, place of all this mixing of races, which the white elites didn't like. You know, it's just like Trump, right? You know, these guys are supposedly saying they're defending white womanhood, you know, and Trump in his rally in Tulsa said, you know, you're going to have some tough hombres that might break into your window and attack your wife or attack your daughter, yeah? It conjures up the same ideas. So Trump is actually picking up on this kind of garbage that the racists have always done in years. So that's another form of violence and racism. And the epitome of that is Donald Trump. So what we got to do, we got to unite as many people as possible across the board to fight these guys. We got to unite the 99% against the 1%. And that's why I love this Black Lives Matter movement, because they got a lot of people in the streets, a lot of young people in particular, taking on the ruling class. And they're talking about slavery, and they're talking about the indigenous people. In fact, the Oglala Sioux, who are part of this movement, are talking about getting rid of Mount Rushmore.
Oh, wow.
And they want to get rid of statues for Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
So this thing is going real deep, yeah, because it's hitting against structural racism. We cannot talk about racism unless we talk about how blacks were brought in as slaves and the indigenous people like the Hawaiians, their land was stolen. If we don't talk about these kinds of things, then we're not dealing with the problem.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. Like, for example, these corporations that want to build a TMT, they have no right doing that. Mauna Kea belongs to the Hawaiian people. That's one of the most sacred places, you know, and that's a real act of violence and racism that we got to stop.
Raymond,
I hope I haven't talked too much, but that's what I wanted
to say. Raymond, thank you so much for bringing
yeah,
those
awesome.
Really important points. You know, back to I was mentioning earlier on the patterns that we've seen in the North
yeah.
American continent and that culture, and think about the Tulsa riots. We're just
yeah.
a lot of conversation about that, and that was all
yeah.
started by a rumor that a black man assaulted a white woman. Same
yeah.
kind of things. This pattern has gone over and over and over. It's
right,
a tactic.
Right. Same. Well,
over
I mean, Emmett Till.
Emmett Till,
again.
Exactly.
Right. Another thing that I want to bring up.
Go ahead, Ray.
I don't talk too much, but most of the people in jail, they're Kanaka Maoli. Now, that's a real super form of racism, you know? And a lot of them come from poor backgrounds. They don't have any programs for them to, when they get out of jail, they get jobs. You know, they don't have too much cultural programs to help them along. But most of the people in jail, in Hawaii jails, are Kanaka Maoli, you know. Mm. Just like a lot of people in jails in America are blacks, you know. So we got to start talking about this thing, too, because there was one guy by the name of Colin Eldridge a few years back there was the
FBI.
Asian Pacific Conference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Colin Eldridge.
Mm-hmm.
He was killed by an FBI agent.
Right.
And that FBI agent got let off the hook.
Yeah.
All right, we got
you
to...
You remember that, yeah,
Antinani? That's true, babe.
Raymond, we want to reset yeah. the program. You're listening to Out of the Box. I'm Rick C. I'm sitting in with Jimmy Trujillo's program. We
yeah.
have Dr. Kiahi is in the house. We have
yeah.
Alana is here from the Soapbox, Kauai Soapbox.
Right.
Puanani Rogers is our esteemed
yeah.
guest today, as is Raymond Catania, who's been giving us some vital information for the last few minutes. And I want to introduce our next guest now.
Actually, I'd like to just ask Raymond, because I know, Raymond, you're probably going to drop the line here soon. In regards to, you brought up the Black Lives Matter, if you will, the movement, and you were there in Lihue. I just want you, because you've been around the block a couple times, just describe in regards to that protest and the energy associated with it.
Briefly, Raymond.
The people, if I can give him some time,
yeah.
The majority of the people there was people of color.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 60 to 70% was brown people that was there. You know, and you had people holding signs like, say, Kanakas for BLM. Yeah, for Black Lives Matter. And my daughter carried a sign just saying that, you know, Filipinos for BLM. You know, so there were a lot of people out there. And then the one who organized that demonstration was a young Filipino girl of 16 years old. Went out and they went out of their way to organize women. The majority of the people in there were women.
Mm, yes.
You know, and I remember one sign that this one Hawaiian girl had that said, Trump small boto.
You know, that's a good one.
Trump small boto, you know. And so the thing is that there was a lot of solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement, because the Hawaiians and the Filipinos and other nationalities are there was relating it to their situation.
Yes.
So this killing of George Floyd went open up the door to institutionalize racism in America towards black people and towards indigenous people and all other non-whites. So I thank Black Lives Matter for doing this. And, you know, this thing is opening up the door. We're having a movement right now for social change, and I think that's really, really positive.
And I want to thank you, Raymond Catania, for being on the show today on Out of the Box. If people want to get a hold of you, do you have contact information?
Yes, I do. My contact information is May, numeral 11, N-I-N-E, T-E-E-N, that's 19, numeral 71, @gmail.com. Because that's when I got arrested with 31 other people against the eviction of Hawaiians and farmers in Kalama Valley. So I've had this email for the longest time.
Awesome.
May 11th.
May 11th, 1971. I'm sorry if I sound excited, but I'm an excitable kind of guy.
That's why we invited you. We love you, Raymond.
That's why we invited you.
Thank you so much for what you bring.
And I want to knock them out.
Okay. Oh, brother, I hope to see you soon.
Aloha.
All right.
Aloha.
Thanks,
Raymond Catania, calling in from beautiful downtown Puhi.
Fantastic.
Puhi, yeah. Okay. And so now we'll bring Fred up onto the, if you will, the pedestal.
Well, we got Fred and Marge Dente in the house.
I can't see Marge.
The originators of this radio station.
Yes,
and without getting into the history of the radio station, let's stay focused on race and racism.
Actually, I wouldn't mind, because there's some things about the origin, and I think Alana shared last week, we took a little time to talk about the origin, but to have, if you will, you guys here, and part of the work that you did with Butch Kekahu, and how that all, if you will, manifest it in your lives as, if you will, allies, activists.
Marge is going to talk first.
Okay, all right. So Ronald Reagan's Star Wars project at PMRF really got us going, because it was a demonstration heralded by Janet Planet, who started this radio station with all the rest of us, and with a whole lot of work, and it took 4 years for us to get on the air. Also, Butch and his family were trying to get national, or at least Hawaiian, attention to the sovereignty movement, which was trying to get a platform going at that time to educate and inform everybody about what the heck happened, and with the queen being jailed and chained in her palace. All this kind of stuff was just not known by anybody. And so we had two Aloha marches to Washington, D.C. in 1998 and in 2000. And Nani Rogers came to our one. She was in attendance in Washington, D.C. with us with the first one.
Wow.
And she brought, I don't know how she got them on the plane, but she brought a whole bundle of tea stalks. And this was, yeah, like 22 years ago.
Kahili.
Yeah, and she made
kahili
out of them. And they were in our march, and I have photographs of that.
Beautiful.
And I am just so thrilled that I was able to be able part of those marches. And we also went to Boston, and we threw tea leaves in the Boston Harbor in protest to what was going on with the Hawaiian.
That was worth the journey to go to Boston.
Yeah. And so those are the things that were really early on with us here at the station and that Nani was a part of, and, of course, Butch and his family. Now, one thing that I wanted to get across to people today is that Butchie's mother was a Kauani, and a foundation started, the Kauani Foundation, and it still exists. And there are videos online that you can go watch, and you can watch Butch at the Statuary Hall at our nation's capital giving a speech about why we were there as an Aloha March. And I had the pleasure of being his lei maker, and I made lei for our federal representative and our federal Senate person for that. Now, got to remember, Butch had diabetes. He was practically blind, and he could hardly walk, and yet he staged these Aloha marches in that condition. He is such a hero of mine. So that's how we pretty much got started, and you can go to the Kauani Foundation, and you can see these videos. It's all happening now. And it's happening big. So this all comes together with what we're going through elsewhere.
Butch was the person responsible for me being here. Because when I first came here to Kauai, this is Fred talking, by the way. When I first came here to visit my stepdaughter, who had moved here in 1978 and told us stories of how she was treated pretty badly, and thanks to Dr. Kiahi for straightening us out on backlash. What backlash is, you know, it's not... somebody just today, we were coming up here today, and we stopped for some food, and there was a lady there, and she had a KKCR hat on, and I told her, tune in, 4 o'clock, we're going to talk. She said, what's the program? I said, racism in Hawaii. And she goes, yeah, there's a lot of reverse discrimination. Well, that's different than backlash. The reverse discrimination, so this is some, I don't know if you want to call this nitpicking, but it's really, you really need to understand that, because the reverse discrimination would be defined as racism. But if we accept the point that Dr. Kiahi made, that it's not, it's backlash. Is that pretty much what you were saying? Yeah. And so I experienced that backlash when I came here big time, many times, being a white man, a stranger coming here, just like Captain Cook, you know, all the other white people that came here and basically destroyed the culture and almost destroyed the people. And but no, Nani's here, and we got a lot of good Hawaiians, Dr. Kiahi, Alana, that are here. Are you part of Hawaiian?
No.
Oh, you're not, but that's all right.
It's okay. I'm Caribbean and Filipino, black and Filipino.
Oh,
I'm
right.
Island, just different islands.
Great combination. Anyway, I wrote a letter to the Garden Island way back, and I just a stranger writing a letter going, what the heck's going on here with the Hawaiians and how they're being treated and the government, and as people are saying it's the fake state and all that. In those days, they didn't even use that term. And Butch Kekahu somehow found my phone number. I don't know how he found it. To this day, I don't. He found and he called me up somehow. He didn't know me from anybody. And he said, hey, you're the guy that wrote that letter in the paper? And I go, yeah. He goes, hey, you and me, we got to talk. So we set up a meeting and we started discussing things. And we eventually became best friends. Butch was my best friend until he died. And I guess a lot of people could probably say that, but I really felt it, and we felt it together.
Well, Fred, I just want to acknowledge. I want to just acknowledge you for being open-minded enough to meet with Butch, a stranger, after writing something maybe that might have struck a chord with other people? Because I've heard that from a lot of Caucasians, that they've experienced backlash and will describe it as, if you will, reverse racism.
I
acknowledge that there's a hurt there that could be hurtful. In fact, I know that there's been instances where violence has been part of that experience
To give you an example of that, Jimmy, when I shortly after we got here, we were told there was such a thing in the school system here as Kill a Howley Day.
What?
Kill a Howley Day was on Friday after school. Did I just drop out?
No, keep going. You're okay. Good. I hit the wrong button.
Oh, okay. And what was going on was, if you're a blonde and blue-eyed white person, boy or girl, you're going to get beat up at school sooner or later, really bad. Some people got beat up really bad. I don't think anybody ever got killed in that. But do you know about that, Nani?
I'd like to throw that question briefly to Pua Nani. Can you talk a little bit about how that backlash that those negative feelings against Howleys have come up in the culture, and how do you understand that?
How do I understand Howleys?
No. How do you understand the feelings that have come up, but that Fred is talking about, referring to, about a backlash against Howleys that is maybe caused by what the European settlers, colonialists, did here?
Oh, that was the big problem. They were the ones that totally came over to rob us of our lifestyles, our lands, our resources, over greed and power. Nothing else. It was all about greed, money, and power.
Control.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I don't hate all Howleys, but I hate those kind of Howleys. Is what I'm saying.
Well, I think what's different is, and there is a difference then, and we talked about this a little last week, between someone who's raised to hate black people or Chinese people or whatever, and just purely from that, from programming, versus a culture that has some anger at a certain type, another culture, because of what has been perpetrated upon them. And I think this is an important distinction in Hawaii that people don't sometimes stop and think about. They go, hey, this guy's, you know, said kill a Howley Day, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, well, wait a minute, let's dissect that a little bit. Mm. I just wanted to give you a moment to speak to that, and then I want to go back to Fred and Marge after that.
They have Kill Indian Day too, yeah?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. I don't consider myself racist because I've grown up from that.
Mm.
Yeah, I've learned too many lessons about that, and I learned where it's wrong, and you're not going to get anywhere if you're going to act like that.
With the anger, right. Acting out.
You can't. Yes. Yeah, you're not going to win.
Understand.
You're not going to win your point. So. Yeah.
And I would say the majority of people would say they're not racist.
Yeah.
And I think the majority of people would agree that racism isn't a good thing.
Right. Okay. So that's it.
Okay.
I only am racist against people that are causing harm. And it's not only Howleys. It's all of them.
And then is that really racist?
And so that's right. That was my question. Mm-hmm. Is that racist?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. 33 minutes after 5 o'clock here on Out of the Box. I'm Rick C., sitting in with Jimmy Trujillo, Alana, Dr. Kiahi, Punani Rogers, and Fred and Marge Dente. And we are going to be opening up the phone lines in a few minutes, but we're going to give Fred and Marge a little bit more time to have some conversation, add to the conversation.
Here we go. Well, real quick, I really appreciate Rick and Jimmy for putting this program together. This is awesome, and I want to say, as one of the people that helped to start this radio station, This is why we started it. This is the reason, so we could discuss issues like this from the heart, you know, about changing our society and raising the consciousness, because that's what has to happen, people. Exactly. The consciousness has to raise, whatever generation that's going to happen in. I hope it happens before I die, which would be a miracle, I think, at this point.
Consciousness,
but maybe not.
Raising and education,
yeah,
both.
But I just want to say really quick that Butch educated me when I came here, and I didn't want to stay. I did not want to stay here. When I felt that backlash, I'm going, man, they don't want me. I don't need to be here.
Mm-hmm.
When I say they, it's just the whole, you know, just the whole thing that was presented to me that I felt. And so eventually I became Hanai'd by the Kekahu family, me and Marge, which totally blew our minds, because I've come to understand what that means. And we became allies of anybody who's oppressed, but especially the Hawaiian people. And then we helped to conceive and put together and produce the marches to Washington, two marches to Washington and one to Boston. And that's one of the highlights of our lives, man, is being awesome in Washington. And Nani was doing the hula on the steps of the Capitol, with the kahilis. And, oh, my God, and we had hula dancers and people playing. I'm in chicken skin right now.
So I want to throw it to Marge for a moment, and we're going to open up the phone lines, 826-7771. And here's the way it's going to go. Quick questions or comments. You only have up to 3 minutes maximum, and you will get a quick comment or response from us. We want to maximize the opportunity for as many people to participate here on Out of the Box. Marge, what else do you have before we go to that call?
Well, one quick thing. If you want to see a lot of videos by the Kauana Foundation, and the one they just made recently was The Real Meaning of Aloha.
Mm.
So type in Kauani, K-O-A-N-I, Foundation, and you'll come across it. I strongly urge that people do this soon.
K-O-A-N-I, Foundation.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, and search for that and look for a video, or do we know the name of it?
There's a lot of them.
Okay, beautiful.
The one you want to see right away is The Real Meaning of Aloha.
Beautiful.
And this is by the Hawaiian News Network. It's fabulous network.
Great, fantastic.
There we go. So we're going to take just a real quick break from the conversation in the room, play this off of our cart, and then we've got a phone call we'll take up. And again, the phone number is 826-7771 to join the conversation. Here we go.
2020 Candidate Voices are available on kkcr.org. Kauai Community Radio's website has a 2020 Candidate Voices page, which includes both archive recordings of Kauai candidate interviews on KKCR programs and Kauai candidate forums, which you can listen to at any time. Your vote matters. Make informed choices. Visit kkcr.org.
There we go. And just want to just a shout out and thanks to our wonderful general manager, Laura Christine, for taking the initiative on the 2020 Candidate Voices. On our website, we have a plethora of candidates and resources for you, the listener, and potential voters. And we're back in the booth with Rick C., Kauhi in the background, Auntie Nani in the foreground, the wonderful dynamic duo of Fred and Marge Dente. And Alana, thank you for joining us again.
We want to mention that this show, as well as last week's program Out of the Box, are available on the website. So if you want to listen again, you want to turn it on to someone, go there, grab the link, and email it to your friend so they can listen to Out of the Box, these conversations. And we appreciate your support of KKCR in the meantime. And if you want to call for brief comments, 826-7771.
And we did have a caller who did share a comment. I'll try to paraphrase, and if I get it wrong.
It was short. It was just one phrase. You can't
get it wrong. Kanaka and Haole are racist terms, according to this was the opinion held by the caller. And we got some shaking of heads for vote. Is that backlash?
Yeah. Yes.
I tried to say that Haole just means without breath, objectively, but she said how it's used is racist, and so. But I feel like Kanaka is empowering. Is that racist to people?
Exactly.
Does it just mean human?
Well, it's too
Kanaka
bad.
Means several
things.
It's a sexist term. It's a sexist term.
Right. It's a man, but Kanaka Maoli is man or woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
And it's blood. relate to black.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so.
Howley, you can take it the way you want it, but to me, it just simply means foreigner.
Hmm. Yep.
It can be Filipino, Japanese, Howley, any
right.
of those.
Stranger, foreigner.
Means.
And we do have another caller. We can
generally
right
apply to Europeans.
Howley
we go.
Is all foreigners.
Okay.
Here we go. She's live in. On the air.
Hi,
caller,
you're on.
Thanks
out of
for
box.
Joining us.
Hi, my name is Stephanie.
Aloha, Stephanie.
And I'm calling in because I've lived here 15 years, and over time I've come to really be at one with the community and where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times where I do feel that the term Howley is hurtful. And I try to, you know, be comfortable with it, but it does somewhat, it is somewhat given in a way that hurts at times. And that's okay. I just wanted to put that out there. But I feel like I do breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to put that out there. And my only question is just like, maybe there's just a different term that we're coming to, a higher awareness with of what that is. And, you know, making it more where we're all like one community rather than so much division, because the division just creates hatred and fear, and that's all I wanted to say. Really.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Caller,
yeah.
Hold on.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Caller,
go ahead.
Caller, you still
she's
there?
Off? No, she's not.
Okay.
Oh, well, she is.
She's listening.
You still there?
She's listening.
She's listening.
Go ahead. She's
so
listening.
Yeah, well, the what I wanted to ask is if the caller could understand that there may be some emotion, some anger behind the use of that term, and if that's what she's picking up on, it's not the term, it's the emotion behind it.
Mm.
So.
And may I also say that I have met many Howleys that feel the way they do, like trying to show that they want to support us and everything, but the underlying reason is because they feel guilty. The Howley guilt.
Mm-hmm. How do you?
I thought I'd bring that up anyway.
Well, thanks for bringing
that
up.
How do you differentiate when it's Howley guilt and when it's sincerity? Can you tell?
Yes.
You can.
I can.
What do you use to discern?
Their actions.
Mm.
By their actions and how they treat me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how I treat them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't treat them mean.
Mm-hmm.
Howley is not a bad word.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Not in my dictionary anyway.
I sometimes describe myself as a Howley man. You know, just it's a descriptive term. It also can be used like the N-word is used. It can be used in a lot of ways.
Sure, absolutely.
But once you become, once you have self-confidence and you feel like you know who you are, and you, sometimes it takes a lot of years to get to that point. I think a lot of that racism is coming from people who are just so totally insecure in who they are that they've got to, you know, blame somebody else for their problems or blame a whole race of people. But, you know, I see myself as a sovereign and independent human being. That's how I describe myself most of the time now. And people have to get to that point. Everybody, Hawaiians, any race of people or any ethnic group of people, has to feel as individuals that they are sovereign and independent in themselves. Not, we don't need a government. We don't need anybody telling us how to act because we feel secure in who we are.
Yeah.
And that's what Butch K. Kahu helped me to understand.
Kiahi,
and many
I think,
others. And many
Kiahi,
others.
What would you like to add to this conversation?
Yeah,
Dr. Kiahi.
Well, it seems like Howley, the word and the usage is coming up, so I just wanted to clarify. And I think I heard the caller say that, you know, she felt maybe offended because she does breathe. So the fact that she was labeled, you know, that Howleys are labeled as no breath. So just wanted to clarify a little bit from my own cultural experience. It's not that Howleys don't breathe. It's that they don't breathe correctly, according to the Hawaiian culture, what Hawaiians would consider breathing properly.
Mm.
And I don't want to get into a debate on that, but let's just say, the way that a Hawaiian person would greet another human being is by exchanging breath. And that is something that's sort of second nature to a Hawaiian person, whereas, you know, from at the point where Captain Cook came, they knew that it was, that there was something a little different about the foreigners. Yeah, so it's, if you look all through Polynesia as well as some parts of Micronesia and Melanesia, that exchanging breath is a, is just considered to be a cultural norm. And that's considered to be a correct way of carrying yourself and interacting with other people. And really, and it, it goes far, far deeper than that, because it's acknowledging the connectedness between human beings. And so, you know, it's not that we know that we all breathe, but we can see that when it's not correctly performed.
So, so the, what I'm, we have a caller we're going to get to in just a moment, but what I'm hearing between what you, the lines and what you're saying is that it's not a mechanical thing, it's more a spiritual thing about...
Glad you said that, because if you... And then I won't get into a philosophical discussion.
Understood.
But anybody...
Not on this show, but you, maybe later.
If just the semantics of what you just said, the word spiritual is combined of several words. Spear, if you look at the root words, even from a medical perspective, that's referencing the breath. Spear, like a spirometer.
Inspiration.
Inspiration that measures the breath. Ritual is about a rite, like a rite of passage, which has to do with the correctness of things. And in Hawaii, we call it pono. And so the correct way of breathing is what spirituality is all about. And this is what, if you get into the technical side of Ho'oponopono, that is about making things right. And it speaks directly to the correctness of things. And so if you look at ritualistic things, this is not about some sort of ceremony with a bunch of occult situation. This is about doing things the correct way. And so that is a very Hawaiian concept that I got to say, even you know, our own culture has sort of lost a lot of that, and a lot of that technology has been bastardized, which, you know, it's not going to stay that way for long. We're going to get it back.
Thank you so much. 826-7771
is the number. Caller, you are live on the air.
Yes, I would like to add... Hello?
Hello.
Go ahead, you're on the air.
I would like to add to the conversation.
Thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
You know, when you say haole, I was always taught that ha meaning the breath and ole meaning the nothingness. So when those first... when Captain Cook first came, the norm was to press noses together to smell the breath of the person. So when they presented this to Captain Cook, and all Polynesians do this, so you would think to yourself, if you were in that time period, you know, the saying would be among the chiefs, Nanawaitahaole. And if the haole has no breath, maybe it didn't mean that he was anything derogatory. It just meant that he did not have a breath. And you got to remember, when Captain Cook saw these Polynesians, they were pretty tall in stature. They're like 6 feet. Captain Cook was only 5 feet two. So to see these guys and trying to present yourself in the proper protocol, you know, they didn't just see him as being a different color, but he just did not have that breath. And then when you were talking about Kanaka, Kanaka is not a derogatory name. All it means is it's a common man, a common person, because in New Zealand, Kanaka would be Tangata. And in New Zealand Maori, that's what it's regular person. It's a man. And so then you had in Tahiti, that same
meaning would be, it kind of slipped my mind for a minute, but yeah, I would like to listen to your guys, talk, and I'm slowly driving slowly, so excuse me. And, yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Thanks so much for calling and really appreciate that. And, Auntie Nani, you want to add anything to that?
Yes. Okay, the word is haole, not haole. There is no okina between the A and the O. So it's haole, not haole. Two different meanings. Mm.
Thanks for that clarification.
Okay, our phone lines are open, 826-7771. We are nearing the top of the hour and the end of the show, so quick comments for quick responses if you have them. Otherwise, we have about seven people here in the studio, all of whom could fill the next hour themselves because of their passion about this issue. So what I want to get to before we finish, Puanani, is we talked about a little bit before the show, we talked about the impact of colonialism. That's kind of what we're dancing around here with and I would like to have you speak to what the impacts of colonialism and that all the offshoots of racism, discrimination, all these things from that, that you see as affecting the Hawaiian culture and or the broader community here today.
Colonialism. Okay. In the beginning, when I first started doing this kind of work, I thought we were colonized. You know, they say countries are colonized by other imperialistic countries that want to come and take over. Well, later on, we learned that we are not colonized. We are militarily, belligerently occupied.
Yeah.
Therefore, however, we do have the impacts of colonialism because they colonized our minds.
Mm.
I believed in what they were telling me when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a matter of learning as I got older about the truth. And, oh, boy, when I learned the truth, boy, did I get angry.
So your education.
I'm not colonized. Our minds are colonized. But as far as the physical part of colonization, we are militarily occupied.
So was that the...
And that's a whole different political situation.
The mental colonization is through education. Is that right, would you say?
Well, just everyday life was, you know, American. We couldn't help it.
Alana... Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a caller waiting.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right.
Also, I was trying to tell Jimmy, is that worth it? I missed the beginning, but when you talked about colonization, did you talk about how, like, 90% of the native Hawaiian population was wiped out right away from disease from the first people that came here? That's, like, huge.
Right. Yeah.
So it's hard. Yeah. So,
what do you call that colonization? I call that
genocide.
Murder.
Genocide.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, so,
yeah.
But that allows for colonization to happen.
It's harder to keep your history and your culture and your religion when a lot of you are wiped out.
And help them to become dominant, you know, certainly.
Yeah, but
that was part of the genocide. That started the genocide, which is still going on today.
Exactly.
In different ways, yes.
In different ways.
Right. All right, let's take that caller.
Hello, caller, you're on the air.
I hope I was clear in what I was saying.
Get out of the way. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. My quick comment is that I'd like to add homeless life matter because of the prejudice and intense persecution of these people who are nomads and usually mean no harm to other people, and they should not be punished.
Mm-hmm. Homelessness should not be a crime.
Yep. Excellent.
Yeah. Okay, that's it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mahalo.
Thank you.
Probably there's a
significant... That's another topic for another show, homeless situation.
Oh, my gosh, it's a big one.
Just a discrimination, mm-hmm. not necessarily based on race.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm.
Poor people that don't have a home, they're less than anybody else.
Some of the racial discrimination ends up in disproportionate economic, distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And so, who if you look at the races... that the ethnicities that control most of the finances here, it's probably going to be more in the Europeans. And that ends up weakening. This is my opinion. Just ends up weakening the host culture, and I think that this is a problem. And so, and I am of European descent. So if anybody else wants to declare their descent on the show, I know Puanani is you're Hawaiian,
Filipino, Hawaiian.
Yep.
English.
Okay. This is Marge speaking. My ancestors on my mother's side are white, and I have been to their burials that go back to 1625 in England. And my father was a German, and I consider myself a privileged white person.
Mrs. Fred, my grandparents, both of my grandparents came, or all four of them came here from Italy. We were poor immigrants, and we wound up in New York City, and we were at the bottom of the ladder along with black people and others, and for a while anyway. Yeah.
All right, we have our last call of the day. Caller, thanks for joining us.
Oh, right on. Hey, I just wanted to say, mahalo to Carrie.
Oh, Rutta, you got to get a better signal or something.
Try that again, please. Get close to your phone.
Okay.
Ooh.
No.
Oh.
You're just breaking up a bit, so try to find better service.
I mean, the worst.
Put your phone in the air. Wave it like you don't care. I don't know.
Please. Man, I just... Hey. Can.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Can.
Hey, brother, this is not really working out too well, but I thank you for calling.
I'll try to understand you if you stay on the line.
Let's get our interpreter here. Alana will talk to you and trying to get your point across. We do appreciate you calling. We appreciate everyone who listens, who calls in, and certainly the people who donate and support this vital resource, KKCR, this community radio station that has been on the air for the purpose of serving this community, not for serving the interests of any particular part of the community other than the primarily the listeners and the visitors. The listeners and the residents is what I mean to say. So we're wrapping up the show. Puanani, do you have anything you want to leave us with?
Stop the racism, please. Enough is enough already.
Thank you so much.
How do you think someone catches
themselves?
You know
what? We didn't even come to any solutions, did we, today?
I think it's important to have the conversation, and you want to leave us with one solution?
All right, take care.
Love everybody.
Nice.
Because racism is a hate crime, and the only thing that you can retaliate hate is with love.
Nice. Thank you.
All right, you got a last phone call. Caller, you're live on the air.
I'm from Brooklyn, Hawaiian, and this is 2020. I think we all should just be get over it. It's 2020 already, you know?
Exactly.
You got people all mixed up, all over the world, okay?
Thank you, brother.
Kids, man, get over it already. No more, all right?
That's if enough. You know how,
mahalo,
let us know.
Aloha.
Okay, I just want to share a message from the last caller who was broken
please
up.
Do. Thank you, Alana.
He just said, thank you so much to everybody for putting this conversation together. The whole, Hale, Kanaka, everything are all, heavy topics, but that are on a lot of people's minds, and he appreciates that we're out, talking about it just openly and having a discussion about it. He appreciates that, so thank you guys.
Right on. All right. Appreciate that.
I would like to just say one thing. If you have a chance, every first Monday of the month, I'm going to do a commercial for my show.
Nice.
Go.
It's Puanani Rogers, and my show is called Living Sovereign every first Monday of the month from 4 to 6 at the wonderful, fabulous KKCR radio station.
Perfect, yes. Perfect. Fred and Marge, thank you so much for coming in. Closing words for us?
Real quick, my solution, one of them anyway, right now, is to continue this dialogue. I hope this series of programs continues with this subject matter because it's the unspoken thing. It has been the unspoken thing. People say aloha all the time, but do they really mean it? You know?
Thank you.
I love you guys. Love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in more.
It's an ongoing conversation we have. Dr. Kiahi, any words of wisdom to leave us with or questions?
I want to kind of say something similar, that this is an important conversation that I think one thing that we take for granted is, well, not that we take it for granted, but it's easy to not have the conversation, put it that way. And it's actually an awkward conversation to have.
Sure.
And it's a lot, and I appreciate people that say, oh, just stop the racism, you know, but I think that's easier said than done. And it's easier to say that when you're, you know, and not to make a sensitive subject, trivialize it, because I'm not doing that, but I'm going to go there. It's easy to say when you're, when a knee is not on your throat, you know. It's very easy to say when you're not the one that's suffering, and you know, you can just say, well, you know, I have a house and my toilet flushes, and you know, and I get to eat TV dinners and all of that. It's very easy to say, oh, just stop the racism, you know, guys. Hey, guys, let's just all get along, you know.
Right.
It's much harder to say that kind of thing when you're actually experiencing it and you're facing it and you're taking responsibility for it. And we can all take responsibility for it. That's for sure, whether you're on whatever side you are.
Stay open and listen to one another. Marge.
Yeah, really quickly, we can take the responsibility, all of us, for continuing these conversations by supporting our community radio station financially.
Yes.
This is what we are doing today, is bringing such important information to all of our listeners, and we have many, many. So thank our manager and her staff, and please contribute. Just go online and punch it in. Thank you.
Or call in after 6 o'clock at 826-7771, and we'll take your pledge. Thank you very much. Alana, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Oh, do I have a second?
Sure.
Super quick plug. I guess tomorrow on Hoʻike at 10 a.m., there's going to be a conversation also about systemic racism with the chief of police and someone from Wilcox. So that should be cool, just to keep the conversation going. And if anybody, and they're going to be asking like accountability questions, which seems cool. So just want to keep it going. And then just, I just want to remind people that, you know, if anything you heard today might have like turned you off or hurt you in a way, or like, you know, just so you know, we're having this conversation so that we can all be able to move past things. But this isn't like the final say on anything. We're just talking about it openly and trying to have an open discussion. So, yeah, and inviting everyone else to participate. Like this, we all love this island so much, and we want there to be, you know, love for each other and for our island, of course. So, yeah, just we're all works in progress. We're all trying our best to evolve as humans. And so, yeah, much love to you all, and look forward to next week. We'll have another awesome discussion on here on Out of the Box, Thursday, same time, same place.
And last week and today's Out of Box conversation on racism in Hawaii is preserved on the website, the KKCR website, if you want to hear it and share it with other people. Jimmy Trujillo, thank you so much for having me in. It's been a pleasure. We honor you.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for joining us. It's a kako thing, right?
Yeah.
It takes a village, and it is 6 o'clock. You are listening to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR, Hanalei, K-A-Q-A, Kilauea, K224-CQ, Anahola, and K205-FM, Honolulu. And streaming live worldwide at www.kkcr.org, 90.9 FM on the beautiful North Shore, 91.9 FM island-wide, and 88.9 on the gathering place of Oahu. If you're in the Anahola Moloʻa area, you're finding us at 92.7. And I want to just make a plug for Monday. This Monday coming up, it's the 29th of June, the fifth Monday of the month, which means it's a community advisory board meeting on the radio. And it's actually, and you are, our listeners, invited to participate in a two-hour community advisory board meeting. Oh, thank you very much. So we will be hosting you, the listener, and we're taking feedback. That's what the community advisory board does. And learn more if you can go to the website, www.kkcr.org. And there's a link to the KKCR Kekahu Community Advisory Board. And we can send you an email.
DJ@kkcr.org.
Thank you, Antonani. And the Commodore's waiting in the wings. We have 2 hours of the Loco Moco show coming on up. So thanks, everybody, for a wonderful show. And this isn't the last of our programming regarding race and relations. And look forward to our next episode. We'll let you know when that's happening. First Monday.
And there we go.
Are you going off for the video?
We are going to play radio for the transition.
By others who expect them to wear that style throughout their life. Now consider their personal style. Might be color or hairstyle, as clothes that they would pick to best match their personality. Likewise, gender identity is shaped at birth when a doctor assigns gender. Grandparents then begin to describe boys as having strong cries or gift girls pink headbands with bows. For some, gender assignment and all that is associated with it is without conflict. As we mature, we carry this assigned identity as we engage with social structures like schools. Cisgender kids go into their assigned boys or girls bathroom without hesitation. Walking into a different bathroom is met with redirection. For transgendered and genderqueer people, however, the assignment of gender at birth is painful. Their identities create tensions and are in opposition to assigned gender roles, behaviors, and expectations from friends, family, and society. They worry, which bathroom is safe for me? This tension also happens around language. In the U.S., English is considered a primary or sole language, and this affects everyone's identity. Unless you are in a foreign language class or a bilingual school, there can be stigma about speaking languages other than English in the classroom or in the playground. You may receive messages that English is the only acceptable language in school. The social messaging is that speaking another language is shameful and problematic, while speaking English, ideally without an accent, is rewarded as good behavior. In this way, Spanish-speaking family members are stigmatized as others, and speaking Spanish becomes undesirable. This process explains why, regardless of country of origin, children of non-English speakers lose their language by the third generation. These are just a couple examples that demonstrate how social structures construct, limit, and place value on identities. This becomes highly problematic when school completion, racial profiling, poverty, and health disparities are associated with specific identities. Social messages from schools, peers, and the media are conflicting. They tell us that all men are created equal despite what is actually reinforced by everyday interactions, like the classic example of a white woman who guards her purse in the elevator when a black man enters. A clash begins when the social messaging and the actual experiences do not match. We cannot be equal if we define one group as better or even superior to another based on gender or racial identification. Whiteness is the preferred norm, the identity that all other identities are compared to or contrasted against. The norm of whiteness is so strong that it is invisible. For instance, when describing a person, if their race is not described, the assumption is that they are white. Inequality touches all parts of our lives. Even when we're thinking of starting a healthy family, we assume that education, income, and healthy lifestyles should produce the same healthy birth outcomes regardless of race in the U.S. Yet research indicates that regardless of age, education, income, and healthy behaviors, and unrelated to genetics, black women in the U.S. have poorer birth outcomes than their white counterparts. Black women experience increased infant deaths, maternal deaths, and low birth weights. Many scientists associate the resulting poorer birth outcomes to increased stress related to experiences of racism. But how do we have social change and equity when those who are most affected can be demoralized and frustrated by their everyday attempts to achieve the same outcomes as their white counterparts? Our relationship to identity groups can be the key to creating change. Since social inequities occur predominantly to communities of color, social transformation requires, among other things, a mobilization of identity. Social movements based in identity, such as the Black Liberation Movement, the Chicano Movement, and the Women's Rights Movement, harness identity by educating people about social structural inequality and its impact on them. In this way, social movements can create an educated counter-narrative. Stories like that of Benjamin Banneker, a black architect who was hired by Thomas Jefferson to build the White House after the French architect Pierre Charles L'Enfant stormed off the job. This exemplifies Banneker's invisibility in U.S. history and the prominence of L'Enfant, who has a metro stop named after him in Washington, D.C. Knowing the invisible history and cultural icons of communities can be used to coalesce people of a shared identity and can call forth other successful historical struggles. For instance, the United Farm Workers Union and their leaders, Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta, carried banners of Our Lady of Guadalupe as they marched from Delano to Sacramento, California to demand justice for farm workers. The same icon was used by Father Miguel Hidalgo in Mexico's fight for independence from Spain, and again in the Mexican Revolution by Emiliano Zapata. The way that these icons were used are also evidence that global and national struggles for transformational change can be organized at local levels. As people committed to social change, the questions for us are, how much do we really understand about the history and legacies of the communities in which we work? And as both insiders and outsiders of these communities, how do we use the power of narrative informed by cultural histories of contribution, resistance, and justice to activate change in grassroots community organizing?